This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
Hello, this is Kate Tenenbaum with the May-June issue of the Saturday Evening Post and beginning with the editor's letter. Aren't you curious? Why, Dad? I have no idea how many times my daughter bombarded me with questions about everything under the sun. Why is the moon round? How do airplanes stay in the air? Where do squirrels sleep? Do fish swim when they're asleep? What are shadows made from? As any parent knows, children ask questions all the time. Harvard child psychologist and author Paul Harris estimates that kids ask around 40,000 questions between the ages 2 and 5. I didn't keep track, but it felt more like a million. And when I didn't know the answer, more often than I care to admit, I'd say, let's look it up. We all are born with curiosity and an innate desire to learn and explore and understand the world around us. It was an indispensable trait for the survival of our ancestors. Because of curiosity, they explored new lands, tried new foods, and discovered new resources. Newton, Edison, Bell, Einstein, the Wright brothers, Tesla, they all shared an insatiable curiosity about how things work, and each one of them changed the world through their contributions and discoveries. As parents, we encourage our children to become curious, to try new things, to never stop asking questions. But it seems that as adults, many of us begin to lose the natural curiosity we had as children. As we grow up and become more certain about the world, most of us leave curiosity to the children, writes Scott Shigoska, an internationally recognized curiosity expert, in Stay Curious. The problem is, research shows that curiosity is critical for learning throughout the entirety of our life, not just at childhood. And though we often associate curiosity with children, the author says that studies have found we actually get more curious as we age. That widely held idea that kids are more curious than adults because they ask more questions is a myth. How do we train our brains to become more curious? Curiosity is a simple, fundamental muscle that we are all born with, says Shigioka, and just like any muscle, we can strengthen it over time if we practice. Here are a few tips for keeping your curiosity alive. Ask questions. Identify what you're passionate about. Do something you've never done before. Be open to new ideas and perspectives. Listen to new music. Travel to unusual places. And embrace new experiences. And we've got more specific ways to feed your curiosity. This is the year to attend the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby, or learn about or even take in the passion and power of flamenco, which has found a second home in Albuquerque. Always stay curious. Patrick Perry, Editor-in-Chief. Contributors, Amy S. Eckert. In the 150th running of the Kentucky Derby, Eckert explores the rich history and deep-seated traditions surrounding the longest continuously held sporting event in the United States. You don't have to dig too deeply into Kentucky Derby history before you learn that fancy dresses and hats have been part of the race since the beginning, says the author. I was so taken with the tradition that I planned to buy my first elaborate Derby hat for the 150th. Jordan Green. I grew up in an Oklahoma town formerly served by the Atchison, Topeka, and Santa Fe Railway, and I've always been fascinated with trains, says Green, who revisits the heyday of passenger rail service in The Golden Age of Rail Travel. The Santa Fe was more than just another railroad, but rather a high-quality service provided by people who wanted passengers to travel safely and in style, and to enjoy the journey as much as the destination. Its legacy lives on. Ken Budd. The strange thing about Civil War battlefields is that they're often so beautiful, so peaceful, so serene, says the author of The Never-Ending War. Over the last few years, I've read numerous articles and social media posts about whether our divided country is facing a second civil war, says the author. When I'm on a battlefield, I always think of Lincoln's call for a new birth of freedom, and the terrible price that was paid, and the fragility of that freedom. And Gigi Raglan. On several occasions, I vacationed with my mother in Santa Fe, New Mexico, where we discovered El Farol, a Spanish restaurant that offered a flamenco dinner show, says Raglan, author of Flamenco. In experiencing the artistry of the guitarist, singer, and dancer during that performance with my mother remains a special memory for me and led to a deep appreciation of the art form that is a fascinating part of the cultural fabric of New Mexico. Letters. The Woman Who Made Us Laugh, Irma's fans. Thank you for The Woman Who Made Us Laugh, March-April, about Irma Bombeck. How fortunate that I live most of my life in the Dayton, Ohio area, just a few miles from the home of Irma Bombeck, where I was raising children as she was. Her columns got me through many a day. Joanne L. Powell, Southport, North Carolina. I only raised two sons in the 1960s, but when I discovered Irma, I thought, at last, someone who understands motherhood and marriage from a wife's perspective. How refreshing she was. Every time I read anything she wrote, I ended up saying to myself, at least there's one other woman in the world who understands. If she can do it and survive, so can I. N. May Melcher, online comment. It was such a joy to see Irma Bombeck as one of your features. I was born and raised in Dayton, and Irma was a lifesaver in my early marriage and young children era. Thank goodness she was picked up nationally so I could read her wherever I moved. Pat Lucas email. Parks and Rec. Stephanie Citron was right on To Praise State Parks, Post-its Travel, March-April. Many have nature and history that rival the national parks. Not mentioned, a lot of them have resort facilities and modern cabins with television and Wi-Fi, restaurants, and prices that beat the motels back at the interstate. And nature is right outside your door. Thomas L. Straka, Pendleton, South Carolina. Cult of Personality. Cable Newhouse's Starstruck, American Pop, March-April, hits the nail's head accurately. The ubiquitous celebrity culture is truly everywhere, touching every profession, hyper-hyping most recipients. The financial industry is among the worst. Nearly every stock recommendation comes from someone's anointed a legend, iconic, or acclaimed or renowned. Too often, their performance results belie their prognostications. Herb Zimmerman, Charlotte, North Carolina. Presidential praise. As a former university president, professor, and lawyer who used to teach a number of FDR speeches in my Great American Speeches class, I found Jonathan Darman's essay, The Making of a President, March-April, one of the most interesting writings I've ever read about the importance of communicative skills to him and of his empathy for average Americans. Thank you both. Dr. Jim Vickery, Montgomery, Alabama. Jonathan Darman gave us an excellent article on the life of one of our greatest presidents. As a polio survivor, I have always felt a kinship with this great man. Polio struck me as a tiny baby and him as a healthy adult. It was not selective. For me, FDR will always be one of my heroes. Cassie Rainwater Fisher, Warner Robins, Georgia. The Price of Happiness. Concerning Francis May's article, Moving Towards Happiness, The Argument, March-April, I consider the Finding Joy and Happiness type of books or articles more fantasy than reality. Financial matters are never mentioned. I think most of the writers and adventurers must have no financial concerns. Might they be trust fund recipients, stock option recipients, or family wealth recipients? Mentioning cost and expenses would not take away from the reading enjoyment, but would give the story more reality. Francis Allen, Tip City, Ohio. A Joy Return. A man stopped me on my walk today and asked if I was Mary Latham, and then proceeded to hand me a copy of the most recent Saturday Evening Post with 7 lessons from everyday heroes. He had photocopies of my page that he showed me and told me he's been handing out to everyone. I read it when I got home, and I can't express to you how much it meant to me to have Ken Budd write that I was one of his favorite stories from his column. It's been a long, hard road getting more good out into a world that desperately needs it. Mary Latham. Send your letters to letters@saturdayeveningpost.com or letters, the Saturday Evening Post, 3520 Guyon Road, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46222. The Argument by Scott Shigeoka. Stay curious. It's never too late to build and deepen our innate desire to learn and explore new things. As far back as African hominids 2 million years ago, curiosity has been the tool that has assisted us with staying alive. It helped us explore uncharted territories, find new food sources, and discover the best methods to communicate with each other. In these ways, curiosity became a critical skill for our survival, something that's been passed down to us by our ancestors that is now encoded into our brain's architecture. Today, we are all born curious, and scientists learned this by pulling back the curtain and examining what's actually going on in our brains. There are 86 billion neurons in our brains, which use over 100 types of neurotransmitters, like histamine, oxytocin, and serotonin, as chemical messengers that trigger actions in other cells. Neurotransmitters provide a language for our brain and impact important functions like movement, memory, and regulating our heart rate. My absolute favorite neurotransmitters is dopamine. In fact, I love it so much that you might find me at a party standing on a chair and raising my glass to dopamine. Many of us are familiar with its role in the reward system, motivating us to engage in behaviors that are usually important for survival. Whenever you eat yummy food, for example, your brain produces dopamine, giving you a heightened feeling of pleasure. That delightful sensation is how dopamine got its happy hormone nickname. It subconsciously motivates you to engage in the behavior of eating again and again because food provides you with energy. Dopamine is also produced when you have sex, bask in the sun, or receive positive public recognition. These three behaviors are critical to our survival. Sex could lead to passing on our genes. The sun gives us vitamin D and regulates circadian rhythms, and praise is a sign that you've won the approval and possibly the protection of your group. Turns out dopamine is all over our curiosity, too. Through fMRI scans, researchers have found that dopamine is produced in our brains when we are in a state of curiosity. This means that at a chemical level, we're being rewarded for our exploration and information-seeking behavior. One study by cognitive neuroscientist Matthias Gruber found that when participants were curious, there was increased activity in the brain's reward circuit, which elicited the kind of pleasure we'd experience while eating a tasty meal or after having sex. I don't mean that curiosity is literally orgasmic, although if you find out how to make that happen, let me know, but that it produces a similar chemical reaction in our brains that motivates us to continue the behavior in the future. Since curiosity is integrated into our brain's reward circuit, this signals that it is a behavior that's been favored by natural selection. Over time, having curiosity become a competitive advantage passed down to the generations that followed. We see this in scientific research, such as in one study that observed the newborns spent more time looking at novel visual scenes compared to previous known ones. Since the newborns were expressing curiosity before they had the chance to learn this behavior from the people and environments around them, studies like these indicate that curiosity is something we are all born with, rather than something we learn over time. That said, just like we have to learn how to eat better or have better sex, we can improve at being curious with time, practice, and guidance. Smack dab near the midpoint between Iceland and Sweden, just on the outskirts of the town of Lancaster in England, there is a place called the Baby Lab. No, they do not create babies there. Rather, they study them, led by researchers like Gert Westerman. A prominent slogan hangs on the lab's walls: children are little scientists. The lab's researchers study children's development, especially in the first 6 years of life, with a focus on how kids use their curiosity to learn things like speaking a language. This is where Katie Twomey, now a researcher at the University of Manchester, shed her proverbial training wheels after earning her PhD in psychology. In a bright room in the baby lab, Tommy could be found looking through a dark paneled one-way window, like the ones you see on Law and Order, to observe the way infants and toddlers explore language and their voice. Since then, she has continued to study how curiosity drives language learning in kids, from how they make babbling noises to how they form concrete words like mama or papa, all the way until they begin to construct sentences like, let's build a giant tower. Through her research and observation, Tommy found that when kids babble da, ah, wow, ooh-ee, they are actually exercising their curiosity about their vocal autonomy. They explore different sounds and notice how some lead to distinct results. When a baby babbles wow, they notice that an adult says wow back at them. Now they're getting attention, physical touch, and a smile. This praise releases dopamine, yep, it's everywhere, motivating them to continue this exploration of their vocal cords and building an understanding that the way they use this part of their body has an impact on how others may treat them. Infants are hungry to take in the world around them, listening to the sounds coming from the people who converse with them or with others in real life. This helps children turn their babbles into words and then eventually sentences. That's why talking to children matters. It helps them with processing and building vocabulary. When you watch this unfold before your eyes, it produces a sense of awe. If you're watching closely enough, you'll see how children use their curiosity as an instrument for learning and growth. While kids get a knack for languages because of their curiosity, it plays a much broader role in a child's development beyond communicating. In those critical years of early childhood, kids must sort out what is threatening and what is not, how to crawl and then walk, and how to be social. They're constantly asking questions because curiosity is key to their evolution. If you've ever spent time with a five-year-old, you'll know their favorite word is often why. It's what powers their obsession with certain topics like the TV show Bluey, dinosaurs, all things Egypt, or marine animals. For this reason, as we grow up and become more certain about the world, most of us leave curiosity to the children. The problem is, research shows that curiosity is critical for learning. In fact, a meta-analysis of dozens of studies and over 1 million participants found that we actually get more curious as we age into adulthood and middle age, and even as we become elders. The only slight decrease in curiosity happens as our cognitive faculties decline, such as when we are nearing death. Therefore, that widely held idea that kids are more curious than adults because they ask more questions than us is actually a myth. Whether it's finding a job, listening to other people's stories, or exploring ways to solve problems, we are constantly generating new thoughts and asking small and big questions. Curiosity is our partner in that life, never leaves our side. Curiosity's role in learning powers our knowledge work society, encouraging us to read books and take classes long after our school years. Scientists and researchers rely on it for research and discovery. Entrepreneurs and inventors leverage it to come up with new ideas, with recent studies finding that curiosity is a predictor of entrepreneurial and workplace innovation. It plays an important role in creativity as well, with studies showing a correlation between curiosity and creative behaviors, and asking open-ended questions to get to better results in creative endeavors. That's why the misconception that curiosity is just for kids or just for the creatives among us also needs to be challenged. Curiosity is something that grows inside all of us. Although research shows that our dopamine declines by 6.6% per decade of life, which might explain why our learning can reduce with age, there are many elders who demonstrate that curiosity fuels lifelong learning, fighting against the pervasive narrative that the majority of our growth happens before age of 30. It's not unusual for elders who age into their 90s or hundreds to tell us they're still kicking because they're engaged in life and the world around them. Personally, I think about my mom in her 70s, who spent the past few years learning to belly dance on Zoom, taking extension classes at the University of Hawaii at Manoa, and joining a hiking club for the first time in her life. Scott Shigioka is a curiosity expert and speaker known for translating research into strategies at the UC Berkeley's Greater Good Science Center and through his popular courses at the University of Texas at Austin. And now Post-its, tips, tactics, and trends, what's new and noteworthy now. Collecting rainwater. Collecting and reusing rainwater is good for your environment and your wallet. While some businesses tout high-priced multi-filter rainwater collection systems that can take you off the grid, you don't need to go to that level of expense or complexity. A simple food-grade barrel hooked into a gutter's downspout is a great way to start. It won't yield drinking water, but it's perfect for topping off decorative ponds, bird baths, and swimming pools. You can use it to clean brickwork, a patio or deck, or even the family car. And because it doesn't contain the chemicals added to municipal water supplies, rainwater is also better for gardens, lawns, and houseplants than what comes out of your tap. It's a free resource that's just waiting for you to use it. Your local hardware store will have all the supplies and instructions you need to get started. Post-its. John Denver, Back Home Again. Music, Listen Again. These Oldies Are Still Goldies. Back Home Again by John Denver. It was ironic that John Denver chose to release John Denver's greatest hits in 1973. At the time, he'd only had 3 song hits, the top 10 in the U.S. On the other hand, maybe he was just manifesting because Back Home Again gave him 2 number one hits. Released on June 15, 1974, Back Home Again contained Denver's usual mix of covers and originals. The lead single was the first tune on side 2, Annie's Song. Written by Denver for then-wife Annie Martell Denver, it became a signature song, topping the charts in the U.S., U.K., and Australia. Critic Sean M. Haney hailed it as one of Denver's finest achievements. The other chart topper had to wait a bit. 2 months after the album was released, Denver's performance of Thank God I'm a Country Boy was recorded for the live album, An Evening with John Denver. The live take reached the top in 1975. What's on Seriously Good Film and TV? Film critic Bill Newcott offers its entertainment picks for mature audiences. Unfrosted, The Pop-Tart Story, on Netflix, May 8th. It's a pleasant commentary on our culture that among the most feverish-awaited movies of the year is director-star Jerry Seinfeld's comedy based on the true story of how, in a matter of months during 1963, Kellogg's developed the Pop-Tart, winning a breakfast arms race against its arch-rival, Post. There's pop humor galore, there's history, there's even a musical production number, plus an all-star cast including Melissa McCarthy, Amy Schumer, Fred Armisen, Jim Gaffigan, Kristen Slater, Daniel Levy, and Bobby Moynihan. If in theaters May 17th. Movie thrillers haven't been the same since John Krasinski, good old Jim from TV's The Office, reimagined the genre with his two A Quiet Place films. Now he aims to change the way we think about family-friendly fantasy with If. The visually dazzling, wildly imaginative, and drop-dead hilarious story of a quirky guy, Ryan Reynolds, and a neighbor girl, Kaylee Fleming of TV's The Walking Dead, who can see other people's imaginary friends, also known as ifs. No one is better than Reynolds at bridging the gap between sober adulting and kid-like abandon, and here he gets a lot of energetic help from the likes of Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, Jon Stewart, Awkwafina, and another Office alum, Steve Carell. Hitman on Netflix, June 7th. Hitmen don't really exist, explains Gary Johnson, Glenn Powell, in the onset of writer-director Richard Linklater's funny based on real-life tale. But that doesn't keep an awful lot of folks from trying to find one. That's where mild-mannered Professor Gary comes in. Armed with his academic insight into human behavior, he helps the New Orleans police launch sting operations, posing as a hitman. The fun gig allows Johnson to escape his milquetoast personality, but eventually puts him in trouble with both a real-life killer and the law. Linklater is a great storyteller, but there's more to this tale of self-identity than just a fun yarn. For biweekly video views of the latest films, go to SaturdayEveningPost.com/movies, or check out Bill Newcott's website, moviesfortherestofus.com. And finally, Ask the Vet. Take to heart. Question. If heartworms are transmitted by mosquitoes, which live outside, why would my veterinarian recommend my indoor-only cat, Sydney, be treated with a heartworm preventative? Answer. Heartworms are transmitted by mosquitoes, but it's not unusual for them to find a way indoors. Starting a heartworm preventative could protect Sid from severe breathing problems and premature death. One heartworm, or even some immature larva, can cause heartworm-associated respiratory disease, HARD. Symptoms include coughing, wheezing, lethargy, and vomiting. Diagnosis requires many tests, and even then, accurate diagnosis is difficult. Therefore, HARD is often misdiagnosed as asthma. Unfortunately, the arsenic treatment that kills heartworms in dogs is toxic to cats, so treatment options for cats are limited. Fortunately, many safe, effective, easy-to-use feline heartworm preventatives are available. Ask your veterinarian to prescribe one of them to protect Sid. Ask the Vet is written by veterinarian Lee Pickett, VMD. Send questions to editors at SaturdayEveningPost.com and read more at SaturdayEveningPost.com/ask-the-vet. That's all the time we have for today. This has been Kate Tenenbaum with the Saturday Evening Post. Good night.